I'm Austin Lugo.
I'm Andrew Harp.
This is With Nothing to Say.
Let's talk about the man who shot Liberty Valance.
Before we get into this week's film, next week we're going to be watching Forever a Woman by Kinua Tanaka. I've seen quite a few of her performances, but I've never seen any of her films before. I kind of wanted to pick this partly because I saw it on the Criterion Collection. It seemed like a pretty interesting collection. But on top of that, too, I realized that we haven't done a film by a female director in like a year and a half. It's been a
Yeah,
while.
that's probably, I was thinking about that too. I've been thinking about that too. And
If we're going to pick a woman director, might as well pick at least one of my favorite Japanese actors. I've never seen her filmmaking work, but it seems intriguing. And on top of that, too, this year we've done a lot of American films. Of the nine films we've done this year, six of them have been American. So, which is weird. We usually don't lean that.
I don't really care.
But
I'm not keep, you know, it's, but you know, it just had, it
it's
just,
good
you
to,
know,
you know,
I agree
reach
with you.
other parts. This is our first Japanese film of the year. So I think the last Japanese film we watched was not too long ago. I think it was maybe like October or November. It was the one about the family. Oh gosh, I can't remember what it was called. Something Walking. It was like 2007, 2008. Doesn't matter.
It was one of your favorite movies of last year. You don't
It
remember the name
was.
at all.
It was on my list. I can't remember the name of it. It's a great movie. I can think of like specific scenes in the movie, but I can't remember the name of the movie. That's okay.
What? It's still walking.
Still walking. I got the walking
You know,
part. I was
because
like
they're still
halfway
walking.
there.
Yeah. Okay.
But this week we watched the incredible.
Yeah, enough of this
Enough of this
like, yeah,
nonsense.
enough of this foreign film nonsense. We watched a real ass American movie. Man,
I don't know if I've ever seen
the
a
American movie.
American movie. This is the most
It is the
American
American
to
movie
exist.
in italics.
I mean, you got John Ford, Jimmy Stewart, and John Wayne. I mean, that's about American as just any movie to have ever existed. And it's
That's right. And
about
it's really about
West.
America as a whole, really, if you
It
were to
really
kind
is.
of, you know, it's a great Western story, but there are plenty of things that it's about the history of modern America. You know, it's a history about the world.
And of course, with any John Ford movie, the beautiful black and white cinematography. Late John
Yeah,
Ford
great
is
vistas.
so interesting and kind of weird because it feels oddly anachronistic. I mean, this film comes out in 1962, and if you had told me it came out in the 1940s, I probably would have believed you. John Ford has a very specific style that
It's like old fashioned, I guess.
it is, and there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not complaining. I mean, John Ford's one of the greatest directors of all time, but it's not even that he doesn't develop as a director, because he clearly, I mean, you look at his early works, stuff like Stagecoach, and you look at some of his middle career work, like
His
Gift by the
late
Time.
period movies, and I think Searchers is a late period one, right? The Searchers, right? The Searchers and this movie, they're similar to me because they are so. There's something so like both movies are kind of like aimed to sort of dispel this idea of like what of American West, right? Like he's kind of like using the Western kind of like formula and like painting palette to create a film that sort of points to the fact that like because of, you know, American history, whether it's true or not, it has greatly impacted the world that we live in today, which, you know, for better or for worse, is the world that we live in. I think there's a strong argument in whether it be The Searchers or in this movie that it might not necessarily be for the best in a lot of ways, you know, in terms of this, like, kind of like this, like, sort of this, like, fake fight for, like, democracy and representation and, like, you know, a liberal democracy and representation, you know. These things that we that Americans hold so dear even today, you know, it's kind of all built up through, I don't know, lying, cheating, stealing, murder, violence.
No one could quite make this film the way John Ford does. Of course, this was originally a novel, which we've been doing a lot of book to movie adaptations as of late. I've noticed for whatever reason we've stumbled upon quite a few of those, and this one in particular. I think the reason John Ford can do it better than anyone else is here's the man who basically invented the modern idea of what a Western is. He invented the mythology that we sit with when we think of a Western and we think of the Wild West. I mean, early John Wayne and the fights with the natives and all that kind of stuff, and the way we see the world and we see America, especially someone who lives in Nevada, where a lot of this stuff was shot and a lot of stuff takes place, like in Stagecoach, which is an actual city that you can go to not too far from where we live, which is, it's wild. Now, coming from the Midwest, living here in a place where so many beautiful Westerns and a lot of John Ford stuff was shot just around here. But I think the reason John Ford can do this in a way no one else can is because he's sort of been disillusioned by his own mythology. And I think this is a film about mythology. There's this great line right near the end I actually wrote down because the line was just so sad.
No, are you talking about like after he tells a story?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, that's like an all-time great line where he says just like, when the legend becomes fact, you print the legend. I mean, that's an all-time great line because it's like, because if the truth were to be known at this point, it would disrupt the order. It would disrupt the social order.
Yeah.
And, it's not worth it.
And that's really what is at the core of this piece. It's not really about Liberty Valance or violence. It's not the classic shootout, which of course we are exposed to the truth of the shootout towards the end of the film, but it's really about hierarchy and order and sort of this constant desire to have order, even if that order comes at the cost of the loss of liberty. I mean, it's not a coincidence that his name is Liberty Valance. Right, I mean, when Jimmy Stewart comes into town, there's this
a good villain.
Great
Lee
villain.
Marvin, he's one of the greatest actors. I watched a movie recently that he was in from the 60s called Point Blank, which is based off that. I think like it's like based off like kind of like this a series of like novels. I think it's based off the first one, and that movie's fucking awesome. And Lee Marvin's amazing. He's got a great voice. He's got a great look. He's kind of have this like pugnacious sort of like face. It's kind of a bit of like a craggly face and stuff. But he's so good in this particular movie. He's so he's such a threat.
And his two gang members, I'm not even sure what you would describe them as.
Yeah,
they give incredible performances.
One of them was Lee Van Cleef.
Okay.
Did you notice that?
His face looked very familiar, but I could not place him during the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, this is pre Good and the Bad and the Ugly for sure.
Right. So, which is crazy.
He's great in that movie. Yeah. I mean, a great cast. Like all the minor characters and stuff in it are great. Everybody's really, really good in it. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's also conspicuously funny. It has some like good humor and lines in it.
Yeah.
Like really good stuff.
I think John Wayne is secretly really funny. And there's just
funny.
Something in his delivery. It's so dry and he has such a serious face. I mean,
are you talking about Jimmy Stewart?
No, I'm talking about John Wayne.
John Wayne. Okay, sorry. I'm getting him mixed up with John Ford. Gotcha. Okay, yeah.
John
Wayne is hilarious in the movie for sure. But I like Jimmy Stewart's lines too. Like, there's that weird, like, man child or whatever that goes into his classroom and they're like, aren't you gonna whip him? And he's like, he's too big. That's such a good line. I was like laughing. Yeah, he was really good. And like the comedic aspect of the film was really good. But yeah, but also the movie's like terribly sad too a lot of the time.
It is a film that is constantly haunting, and there's no satisfaction in this film. I think when we watch a Western, there's a certain satisfaction that we expect from the big shootout, right? We've got our good guy, we've got our bad guy. And what I love even more about this film is John Ford actually leans into that at the beginning of the movie. I mean, we get our classic Liberty Valance, evil guy beating people up, hitting women, all that kind of shit. And
sure.
You got the bumbling sheriff, right? Who doesn't know what he's doing.
Like the marshal.
The marshal. Jimmy Stewart comes into town. He's kind of
he's a lawyer.
He's a lawyer. And you got your sharpshooter John Wayne, right? You have all of the traditional ingredients of a Western.
Right. Well, and I guess so. You say that, but I think the introduction of Jimmy Stewart is what kind of sets off, kind of unbalances a little bit, because you could just make a movie where it was John Wayne and Lee Marvin and you could just call it a day,
right
and it'd just be like John Wayne, he's fighting Lee Marvin, and then they get into a standoff at the end. You know, that would be probably a really good movie. But the introduction of Jimmy Stewart's character into the fabric of the town and the community and all these characters and people, it sets off something really interesting, which makes this movie stand out. He sort of like unbalances kind of like the fabric of like their way of life. He brings in education. He brings in kind of like this idea of like a nonviolent action, which even he doesn't believe in anymore. He brings in all these like different like things that are kind of like part of like America overall. But it's sort of, he's kind of coming at it. Jimmy Stewart is really, and this is not like a new opinion or a new like a read or anything like that, he really is the true villain, right? Because he's coming in to kind of like in kind of like he's coming in with this kind of his own self righteousness, which, you know, isn't that different than like a colonialist coming in and you know, with the idea of like bestowing, you know, their education and their religion and all this stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't help but think, and maybe it's just because we were talking about it last week, but A Face in the Crowd and this sort of political undertones of this film. And I mean, Jimmy Stewart isn't as openly evil as perhaps Andy Griffith is in A Face in the Crowd.
Well, I wouldn't even...
And he's more self-aware, but...
Yeah.
At the same time, he is utilizing his sort of educational background and the advantage of coming from a foreign place, right? The East Coast to
make himself rich and famous.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, and he takes credit for it. And I mean, we see the consequence of that. I mean, that's why the name of the movie is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Cause it's all about this.
Anything
idea
for the man
perception.
Who shot Liberty Valance.
and this idea
he feels
of
bad about it. Like he does, he feels bad about it. Cause he knows he lies. He lied.
Well, like he creates an entire career out of it. Like he doesn't feel. Yeah. I mean, sure, he feels bad.
He doesn't feel that
it,
bad,
but you know, not enough to not become governor and senator and.
You know, I love it too. You
Congress.
Know, like it's and the stuff with the reporters is so good. I love the beginning of the movie, by the way, the very beginning, the opening scene, because I don't know how John Ford does it, but he's able to imbue. We don't even know the story at this point. But he is able to imbue this part of the movie with so much like sadness and what's the word, like pathos, I guess you could say, like maybe I'm using that word wrong, but he's just able to like imbue all these scenes with such like a strong, like I feel so emotional when I see those opening scenes, even though I don't even know the background, you know, like when they go to the burned down building, John Wayne's burned down house. That's crazy. You know, like that to me is just such like, powerful images, you know, powerful performances, you know, the use of music is great too, I think, for the most part. And you don't even know the full story yet. I don't know how the hell he's able to do that, but he's so effective at doing that. And then you get the rest of the story and it just becomes even more impactful.
Yeah, I'm thinking of those opening moments, and I'm thinking specifically of this shot right before they go to John Wayne's burned down house, and it's Hallie, whatever her name is, and she's talking to whoever the hell she's sitting next to.
It's the marshal.
The marshal.
You just watched this movie.
I literally, I did just watch this movie, like literally minutes ago. She's sitting next to the marshal. And her eye line is really
She's great.
Weird. She's not, I mean, obviously she's not looking at the camera, but she's not really looking at anyone. And it's not like she's looking at something off in the distance. And it creates this really surreal feeling in the viewer that just, it's almost off-putting. Yeah. And I think that's part of like this opening scene where even though he comes into town and Jimmy Stewart and her come into town and the reporters are all excited and happy, right? The dialogue suggests that this should be a happy moment. And yet, on top of that is just this layer of sadness that is not necessarily spoken. I mean, you kind of get a couple of like hints here and there, but it's more through the images and the way that it's shot that just something feels really off. And it's this moment of mourning. And it's really interesting thinking back on it, looking at how Jimmy Stewart reacts during this moment, because he is sort of this open, boisterous, political self, even though he's going here for a funeral of, I mean, I maybe
it's the guy who
word, yeah, but it's the guy who saved his life,
who made his life the way that it is.
Yeah,
it's the guy who made him who he is today. So obviously he feels bad that he died, and he get and he got nothing for in return, really.
Yeah, I mean, John Wayne sacrificed everything for, he gets nothing in the end, which again is another strange and weird turn of events in this film. Is, well, John Wayne is our real hero in this piece, and yet
he is
rewarded with his girl being stolen and just dying. Like, we don't know anything about him after Jimmy Stewart leaves to do whatever he does.
We just know what happens after. We just know what happens after he saves Jimmy Stewart, right?
Right.
Which is he becomes like manically depressed, essentially. And I'm assuming that he never recovers from that. Because the reason why he saves Jimmy Stewart is because he deeply cares for the Vera Miles character, for Hallie. And so he knows that if Jimmy Stewart dies, she'll be distraught. So he has to save him. But in saving him, like, everything is fucked entirely. Like, because even at the beginning of the movie, you know, they talk about like the fact that, like, you know, they talk about like the train station coming in, right? And how it changed everything or whatever. And now everybody that lived there before basically doesn't live there anymore. Like, everything is completely changed. Like, in a matter of like, what, like a few decades, maybe several decades, maybe like, I don't know, 3-4 decades, maybe. I think like Jimmy Stewart is supposed to be like in his 20s or whatever in the movie, like when they flash back,
right?
Which is fine. It doesn't really matter.
No,
I don't need like a young actor composite.
I don't want anyone else playing Jimmy Stewart. No, absolutely.
No, I'm okay with that. So it doesn't really matter. And yeah, like and you can maybe even chalk up that train station coming in, because, you know, they're, I'm sure, like, becoming a state also led to, you know, that, you know, him killing Liberty Valance in order to save Jimmy Stewart, which I need to know the name of this character. It's like it's a very odd character, Ransom Stoddard.
Yeah.
In order to save his name Ransom, like, it sort of sets off this like butterfly effect in which, you know, they live in the modern world essentially now.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's the destruction of tradition and the Wild West, not in the sense of, because we often think of these Westerns as a sense of sort of conquering the savages and this sort of civilization, right? The civilizing of these communities and going to the West and bringing law and order and these kind of things.
Yeah.
And yet with this, technically they bring law and order. I mean, that's kind of Jimmy Stewart's whole thing. I think of him.
There's a lot of discussion about that in the movie.
Like when they're in the schoolhouse and he has that quote.
Yeah, that scene is so funny. He's such a bad teacher.
He's a terrible teacher. I mean, speaking as a professional teacher, well, he's not good.
Well, it's like the idea is that he's not telling them to, like, oh, you know, think for yourself and, you know, da da da. He's basically just saying, like, he's basically just being like, yep, America is the best country. He's indoctrinating them, right? Yeah. Like, he's not a good teacher. I mean, learning to read and write is great, but to what end?
He's not utilizing, like, he kind of sells education as this sort of liberty, right? This idea, which it should be, right? Education is this thing that liberates us from the chains of poverty and ignorance. And yet he utilizes that very thing, right? When he takes the newspaper, which is selling this very specific, I mean, it's a political move when he takes that newspaper, which is selling, right, a very specific idea of how the world should work. And he's teaching
the fact that we should be a state, right?
And the fact that we should be a state, and the whole something about the big cattle. I don't know. There's like this cattle ranch thing going on.
I think the idea is that, like, you have like these ranchers who own a lot of land or control a lot of land, and they don't want to be a state because obviously being Because then I think, you know, you could lose your land. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden you're now under the purview of the United States law. And I think if you own a lot of property and you're trying to make a lot of money off of it, you probably don't want to be taxed and you probably don't want like cops around. But statehood obviously can be, you know, and you can see both sides, right? Like you can see why being a state might be good for people because, you know, schools, you know, social services, transportation, obviously like the train. But again, it's like the people in the town, including the Vera Miles character, you know, they see it as like a progressive thing, you know, like, wow, you know, we get all these different things if we become a state. But at the same time, you know, it sort of brings in kind of like, instead of like her, like Lee Marvin types who are violent, they'd beat people up, you know, their pleasures and their tactics are very simple. Jimmy Stewart, you now have like Jimmy Stewart characters coming in, right? Like Ransom Stoddard characters coming in who are tactical and they're liars. And they do things with like a kind of like a smile and like a handshake in order to fuck people over or get them killed. It's the same language, but like in a different dialect.
Yeah, it's like these two sides of the same coin where they're both doing the same thing, and then they're both kind of creating mm-hmm. this chaos and evil. And perhaps you could argue Jimmy Stewart is actually even more evil because, unlike Liberty Valance, at least Liberty Valance is both aware of what he's doing and it's very obvious. Right? Yeah. He's not trying to hide anything.
Like he comes into a room and it's like, oh shit, you know,
like you know exactly what's going down.
Man. He's a bad guy. Yeah.
He's a bad guy and everyone's aware of it. And he's aware
of it.
He's
not a liar.
And he owns it. Where Jimmy Stewart's character, Stoddard, he creates this illusion that he's fighting the good fight, right? He's the good guy here.
Yes.
He kind of
believes it.
Until the end. That's part of it too, is, you know, till near the end, he buys into his own bullshit, right? He buys into the idea that he is worthy of this and that he's moving the town forward, and he's blinded by his own ambitions that he doesn't realize that he is no better than Liberty Valance at all.
Yeah, and the John Wayne character, Tom, he's like kind of like in the middle, right? Like he's not Lee Marvin, he's not Jimmy Stewart. He is a thoughtful, good-natured guy. You know, his interests are also simple. He wants to marry Vera Miles. He wants to be in a relationship with her. And he cares about the people in the town, obviously. He does want to kind of establish this kind of, you know, this level of law and order, right? Where, you know, people are, you know, get what they need and, you know, are more or less protected. Of course, then again, you know, you have rancher guys and stuff like that, like Lee Marvin, who are coming in, Liberty Valance, that is. So he's kind of like in the middle. And again, you know, the movie is kind of like about the destruction of that type of guy, right? The end of that guy, you know, because he literally kills Liberty Valance, but through Liberty Valance's death, John Wayne and sort of that like worldview, that purview, it also melts away.
Mm-hmm. His reason for existing, because he's the classic Western figure of sort of the stoic John Wayne type character. I mean, it's so amazing.
Masculine.
Yeah.
Masculine guy, right? Like when he gets beaten up, when Jimmy Stewart, you know, when Ransom Sardar gets beaten up, he's emasculated.
Yeah. And he's beaten up multiple times. I mean, that's the very first time we meet Jimmy Stewart. And
he can't shoot a gun.
He can't shoot a gun. He can't do anything. And yet he weirdly is seen as the hero of this town. And it's so.
Yeah.
I think back to all those moments where he's beaten up and I mean, he is sort of emasculated. I mean, the first time he is beaten up, they sort of like take all his books, right? And the idea of like the sort of scholarly, nerdy, sort of like not a true man. And then the next time he's beaten up is he's serving food, right? They even call him a waitress. They see him as sort of less than a man because of his reaction to violence. And towards the beginning of the movie, he keeps continuing to sort of refuse violence because he thinks the way to win is merely through these tactics. And I guess it sort of works out in the end, because it's not so much that he has to be successful in his violence. He has to create the illusion of violence. He has to create the illusion of masculinity. I think that's kind of what he learns throughout the pieces. He, because he never really learns how to shoe. I mean, he never does.
No,
the
he doesn't.
Things, right? He doesn't. It's not like this growth of, you know, we started as this like nerdy scholarly guy, and then by the end, he's a John Wayne type character. He's not any better than he was at the beginning at these sort of things. However,
he becomes, just accepted it.
Yeah, he just accepts it, and he's like, "That's just not who I am." And yet he still goes out, and that moment's also interesting then, because he still goes out and tries to kill Liberty Valance, not knowing that John Wayne is there.
Because he's accepted the fact that, like, talking to Liberty Valance or whatever isn't going to go anywhere. And he's so upset, I think, about being emasculated in front of the Vera Drew character. And he's so upset and so vindictive and filled with revenge that he has to defeat Liberty Valance. John Wayne is the opposite. He's not like a vengeful guy. He's level-headed, he's stoic, he doesn't care. That's why Jimmy Stewart is a completely different. The Jimmy Stewart character is a completely different character. He's like not a good guy. Like, he's not all that different than Liberty Valance when Liberty Valance, like, you know, gets you know, like when he loses the election, you know, how is he any different than when Jimmy Stewart confronts him to kill him about, you know, essentially, you know, making him look less of a man?
Yeah, I like that sort of reversal of masculinity, where in that moment Jimmy Stewart sort of wins, right? He kind of shows off his own populist style of control, and both of them are completely under the thumb of their own emotions. I mean, everything Jimmy Stewart does, even though ironically enough he tries to be a person who's logical and utilizes education and utilizes sort of tactics to sort of think his way out of situations, yet in the end
it all comes down to, you know, like when all else fails, like it's just, again, it's like at least, like, John Wayne is, like, once again, he's straight up and honest about it, like, throughout the movie, where he's just like, look, out here, you know, we use, you know, in order to solve problems, occasionally we have to, like, kill ourselves, kill each other over it, you know, and that's just the way it is, you know. And Jimmy Stewart's like, no, like, we don't need to do that, you know, we don't need to do that. And, you know, that's kind of like what happens in the end, where Jimmy Stewart realizes, like, in order to sort of supplant and carry on this quote unquote social order, violence has to be in the equation at the end of it. It just has to be like in a different, it has to be in a different, it has to be in some kind of like more palatable way, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And when they kill Liberty Valance, there's like 30 minutes left of the film, and at the time I'm like, well,
yeah,
what's gonna happen now? Like, the thing has been
that
done.
might be like the one, like, just nitpicky criticism I have is that, like, when after they kill Liberty Valance, it's just kind of like, all right, is the movie gonna end? You know, it starts to kind of like weigh a little bit, like the length starts to like weigh a little bit. You know, it's like a 2-hour long movie, so you're just kind of like, okay. But I mean, like, the election scene's good and crazy, and like all that stuff is good. The ending's amazing, obviously. So I can't really, it's just a nitpick.
I was definitely confused by it when it happened. And obviously part of it is for the reveal, the John Wayne reveal that he actually killed Liberty Valance. I feel like it's necessary though, because I think if you end, let's say we have Liberty Valance killed, and then right after that we reveal that it was actually John Wayne, and we end there, then I think
you have to show his righteous power.
Yeah, right. It's because if you end with that, it feels like it's, at the end of the day, it's still a story about violence and killing and the progression of sort of these Western ideals. But because we have another 30 minutes after this where it becomes basically this political thing where we watch an election take place and they're arguing about it. And you see...
It's political tactic.
Yeah, you see it at the core. It's not about the killing. Like even though the movie is called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, it's not about the killing of Liberty Valance, right? It's the idealization which is why like the very last line.
Well,
great last line.
So like, yeah, again, kind of going back, like imagine a movie where Jimmy Stewart doesn't exist. If it was Lee Marvin and John Wayne and Lee Marvin and John Wayne got into a fight and he killed Lee Marvin, the ending would be like, we did it. The town has been saved. Isn't that great? You don't get any of that stuff in the movie, right? Like Liberty Valance is killed and it's not like people are happy that he died, but there's not really any kind of like, it's not like the town was better, you know, like it's not like anything was just like suddenly improved, you know, or this kind of like rapturous, like kind of ending where it's like, we did it. We saved the day, you know, because of that killing. You know, it leads to this like statehood thing. It leads to the rise in power of liberal lawyer Jimmy Stewart becoming a politician. You know, what do they say? Like, he's like a senator and a governor and all this stuff. Like, you know, he's like this powerful politician, you know, and but again, he has these kind of like twisted ideals of like education and you know, diversity and Americanism and nationalism and all this stuff. That I wouldn't necessarily think, I don't really think is a very, those are really like great ideals, right? Like I think people are worse off because of that in general, like the whole of like this state or whatever they are in.
Yeah. And as I was watching this movie, I don't typically do this. Emily loves to do this, which whenever we start a movie, she'll go into Wikipedia and read the whole plot, which baffles me. Why? Why you'd want to do that, particularly at the beginning of the movie. But it was near the end of the movie, and I realized I referenced a couple of cities like Stagecoach, but we never know what state they're in. Now, my assumption would be Nevada, because it's after the Gettysburg Address, and Nevada became a state in 1864. So that's my, and they're kind of in that sort of Western. And
okay, that's probably a good theory. They never say, I don't think they ever say the state.
But they never say the state. They say statehood a lot. And I think it's purposeful because it's not, right? It's not really about the territory to a state.
It's a general Western.
Yeah, it's about the West. It's a state out West. It's about the United States, right?
Yeah, it is.
About this idea of what it means to be an American and how perhaps... And obviously it's different now than it was then, but how politicians who live in Washington, D.C. control the lives, and which is like one of the big arguments for why, you know, a lot of territories don't want to become states, is now you are sort of under the thumb of people who live thousands of miles away, which isn't as big of a deal now because, you know, the idea of
this is
very different. But you look back, you know, in the 1800s and even, of course, when this film is released in 1960, what it meant to sort of live in different parts of the country was a very big thing. I mean, if you lived in Nevada, you lived a very different life than you lived in Indiana or Kentucky or Maine. And so the fact that this small group of people, which I guess is the problem still is, right, a small group of people, even though he sells it as a republic, right? It's the people who are supposed to take over and vote, but it's not, right? It's the small
part. He's such an asshole people. About it.
Yeah, he is.
Like the school scene, again, going back to the school scene, he, like the way like he corrects people's grammar or like corrects like, you know, like their quotes and stuff like that. And he has like this self-righteous like tone about him. Well, as if he's, you know, imparting wisdom to, you know, these lowly illiterate farmers, you know, and it's just like kind of like anger inducing because you're just kind of like, bro, you don't know anything. You know what I mean? Like you don't know shit. And you know, and again, like that's like kind of like that's unfortunately, even though some would say otherwise, that's kind of like how liberal democracy works, right? Like it's you know, education, the most important thing in the world. But liberal democracy, liberal, you know, idealism, you know, this thing, it kind of, it's sort of all about like explaining to people who you feel are lowlier than you, whatever that means, that they, that really what they want is not what they want. What they really want is this. You know, you want a democracy, you want a republic, you want this, you want that. And I'm not like an anti-democratic person or anything like that, far from it. It's just that it as we've seen throughout human American history, obviously people who espouse like, you know, pro-democracies, you know, democracy and all this stuff, they use it, they use like this idea of a democracy in order to get what they want.
Yeah. And gosh, I don't know why that classroom scene is just so, it's such an incredible moment. It really captures this film as a whole. And it makes me think it's very funny. And it makes me think of, as a teacher, an English teacher, so I don't teach history, so it's a little different, but I live in a very, or I don't live, but I work in a very rural community, very sort of conservative Trump. But it's weird because that small community lives right outside of Reno, which is a pretty liberal blue community. So it's like this weird dichotomy. And when I talk to kids, just my students, about this kind of stuff and just really try to explore their minds, because unlike Jimmy Stewart's idea of education, we shouldn't be indoctrinating any specific idea of, you know, this is good or this is bad. I have kids who love Trump, and I have kids who, well, actually I don't have any kids who love Biden, because I don't know if anyone feels that strongly about Biden, but, you know, kids across the spectrum, you know, I got socialists, capitalists, everything in between. And one of the things is you talk to all these kids and they are so, no matter, right, their beliefs, they're so convinced that the United States democracy is the greatest thing to have ever existed. And they just can't like fathom another way of existing in the world. I mean, even
another system, another, yeah.
Right. They've spent the last, you know, 10 years basically being indoctrinated, 10 to 12 years indoctrinated with this idea of this is how the world works. And I'm not,
but
even,
it's all, yeah, it's all based on a lie. You know what I mean? That's the point of the movie, right? Like the point of the movie is that idealistic like view of the country is all
doesn't
based
exist
on a lie. It's based on a quote unquote legend, which is just a lie, right? Like it doesn't exist. Like a system like that can't exist. It's a fraud because it was created through a lie, right? And that's like the idea of the movie, right? The Jimmy Stewart character Ransom, his career, he's a fraud, he's a hack, because the reason why he's famous is because of something that he didn't do.
And even when he tells the truth,
it's too late.
Yeah, it's that perspective of the press, which is a really intriguing part of this film, is the press plays a very big role in
Peabody
and how sort of stories, legends, myths. I mean, I teach a mythology class, and I talk about, when we talk about modern myths, the way that we shape and we see the world is so important, and the way we tell these stories matters. And even when he confesses to the press, because the press keeps saying over and over again, you know, it's a story, right? We have to produce it. We have to, I mean,
why are you here?
He literally comes to the funeral, right? He comes to his fucking casket, right? He's about, and he's like, we have to get the story. And so he feels like the villain. Like, he feels like this asshole is like, I understand you want the truth, but like, you know, have a little respect. And yet at the end, when he rips it to pieces, you realize, oh, like this idea of the free press, this idea that anyone can produce whatever they want. And
it's also a lie.
All this bullshit. It's also a lie, because we all have to propitiate this myth that this is how the world works. Because if we don't do that, then suddenly our world crumbles, and we can't afford that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not worth it to print the truth in this case, because it's, again, it would completely disrupt the social order. It would disrupt his career, which, you know, is this amazing story about this guy, you know, this lawyer who went out west, you know, trying to, and he got beat up, but, you know, he shot him and he killed him. And now he's a, you know, it's like that story has been around for too long. And that story is sort of like a microcosm. and like the history of the United States in general. It can't be disrupted.
Yeah, it's like John Ford himself who crafted the idea of what we think of as a Western and crafted this mythology of the Western and how we see the West is now trying to fight the very thing that he created. But he recognizes that in the end he can't. It's too late, right? It's already it's written in stone. I mean, because as one of the originators of the Western genre, I'm not saying he did this on purpose, but at least inadvertently, he sold the idea of what it meant to be an American, of what it, especially sort of during this time in history. And now he's trying to do something different. And yet in the movie itself, it's sort of this recognition that it's too late. Like, no matter what I do, we've already, as a culture, as a people, as a country, have decided that this is how it is. And it can't be broken. There's nothing I can do that can break that.
Yeah. I love that scene when, just to like go on a tangent, I love the scene when he burns down his own house, when John Wayne burned down his own house. That is one of the great, that whole sequence where he like freaks out is one of the greatest sequences ever. John Wayne is so good. And he's so good in this movie. And when he has like that breakdown, it's just so, there's something so like heartbreaking about it.
Yeah. John Wayne very famously doesn't sort of evoke a lot of emotions. He's pretty serious. He's got kind of that stone face, the kind of Buster Keaton type of thing. And so when you have a moment like that, when he's just broken and he burns his own house down, and it's not even he kills himself. He tries to kill himself, right? He doesn't give this big, you know, crying, yelling, screaming.
Yeah.
It's this very just subtle little movements in his face and his eyes. Right. And that defeat where he just, he starts the fire and he just sits there.
Because it's over.
It doesn't matter, right? It's
over. Or like, I love the, oh man, I forgot about the detail at the beginning when they look into the casket and they're like, where are his boots? You know, put his boots back on, give him back his gun and his holster. And then his marshal says like, oh, he stopped carrying a gun. It's like, oh my God. Because it doesn't matter anymore whether he carries a gun or not. It doesn't like things have changed, you know, like I don't even care if somebody like pulls out a gun and tries to shoot me. Like I have no use for it anymore. Like it's over.
Yeah. He's a man out of time at this moment. I mean, the moment, right, he creates the end of his own sort of world. I mean, he was, this John Wayne character was built for this world. He was built to do this thing, and he's great at it. He's the best at it, right? He's a sharpshooter. He does all the things you're supposed to do. But that moment he kills Larry Valance, I mean, it is a sort of suicide. So, you know, him committing, not completing, but attempting suicide in that moment is like, yeah, there's nothing left. Like, he's, the fact that he doesn't carry a gun after that shows that he is no longer part of this world. Like, he can no longer exist. The world sort of moved on and he's just not part of it anymore. He can't exist in that world.
Yeah. And he can't, and it also, it's really, that's really of course tied to kind of the Vera Drew character, right? Like, he can't have her. And if he can't have her, then like, what's the point of all this? Like I built like this room for her and all this on my house, like, and all this, like, you know, I have this like great property, you know, I'm doing really well. And, but again, like you said, it no longer matters anymore, you know, and if that doesn't matter anymore, then like, what's the point? You know, it is just, you know, suicide, like, you know, he doesn't, you know, he was, you know, he's finding a way out of just like of this world that he no longer recognizes anymore.
I'm trying to think of other moments that really, I mean, every moment just looks so goddamn
everything. Good. I mean, once again, it's a John Ford movie. So, I mean, like, you get amazing American West vistas that look beautiful and amazing. I think his best looking movie is The Searchers, but this one's really good looking too.
Yeah, I mean, my
most of that I've seen, of the ones I've seen, that is like, he has like 100 movies.
He has so many movies. That man, just because he was the epitome of the
he went the
studio system. That guy just, he made all the movies. It's
right. But yeah, I mean, this one is particularly, again, I just love kind of like the configuration. I just love like the this movie is just so good because it's just like, well, now that I think about it, I forgot about My Darling Clementine. That is probably his best looking movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like maybe like I'm talking about like, yeah, like the look visually of those movies. Oh, no. Searchers is pretty good.
Searchers is pretty good.
You know, Searchers, like the end of Searchers also kind of reminds me of the end of this movie a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like he saves her at the end and he walks away.
Mm-hmm.
That's also, and he like, he just like walks away into like the desert.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like another movie where it's just kind of like, wow, you know, like that's the end of that guy. You know, that type of guy, it's over. You know, like if it ever existed, you know, it was like it existed for a second and it disappeared. Liberty Valance, though, I think is interesting because it's the fall of guys like John Wayne and the rise of guys like Jimmy Stewart, of the Jimmy Stewart character, right? The liberal educated lawyer, politician, teacher guys who have their own playbook of how to control people and to take property and to inflict violence. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Like, it's just so perfectly, like, executed, even though it's really quite complicated.
Yeah. Wow. Well, should we wrap this conversation up? I mean, that felt like a really good...
Sure. Yeah, why not?
All right. Well, you kind of gave a bit, so I'll give a bit. And yes. I will say there's a very good reason that this is the third John Ford movie we've done on the show. I believe
he just kills it every time.
I mean,
there's at least the second, but maybe the third. I don't remember.
I know we did Darling Clementine. Didn't we do Searchers on here too? Wasn't Searchers?
No, we didn't do Searchers. No, I've seen Searchers, but I've also talked about it.
Maybe we just talked about it a lot. Yeah. We've done John Ford multiple times. I feel like we've done another with John Ford. Maybe not. I don't know. But the point is, the reason we keep doing John Ford is because he really is one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. And you just can't help just being amazed by his abilities and his craft. And you can tell, especially when you watch his late career stuff, that here's a man who's made 50 plus films. I mean, he knows exactly what he wants and he gets it in this way that no one else really can. And it's interesting to compare him to someone, you know, like one of my other favorite directors, Jacques Tati, who only made 7 films in his entire career, and how both of these people, even though they're sort of on opposite ends of the spectrum in some sense, in the way that they make movies, and since John Ford was just always producing movie after movie, and Jacques Tati, it take him years and years and years to make a movie, and yet they sort of get to the same place in the end. And this movie is just so beautiful and moving, and there's really nothing to not like about this film. I mean, you got John Ford, you got John Wayne, you got Jimmy Stewart, two of my favorite actors of all time, one of my favorite directors of all time, all in a piece together. I mean, it's, how do you not like this movie? How do you not love this movie? I mean, the cinematography is beautiful, the music just works perfectly, incredible performances all around, even by some of our smaller characters, and a story that really hits home of what it means, especially as an American, you know, what it means to be an American in this world, in this day and age, quote unquote, and sort of this just constant forward movement that we are obsessed with, and without asking what is the cost of this, you know, this constant need for the new technology, the new thing, the new this, that, the other.
Yeah, for progress. Yeah.
Merely for the sake of progress, quote unquote, but not asking ourselves, well, what does that progress actually mean? How does that actually look like in the world? Are we any happier than we were before that? So, gosh, just an incredible film all around, and definitely a 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I'm going 9 out of 10 as well. It's you know, it is one of the capital T American movies. You know, it's about America. It's a Western, so which is a very American genre. It has some of the greatest American actors of all time. It's made by one of the greatest American directors of all time. And again, it just sort of like, I don't know, I'm just so like enamored with how like the movie sort of uses a Western story to tell kind of like the history of like liberal democracy in the United States. Like, it's so like, that's so astute and so smart. And it's so like far beyond like anything else anyone has made like in the past 5, you know, just however many years, you know, just it's so masterful. And so, yeah, it's one of the greatest movies ever.
All right, y'all. Thank you so much for listening. You can find everything I do at Austin Lugo.
I'm on Letterboxd at RetroAndrew, RETR0 Andrew.
And you can find this podcast wherever you hear podcasts. You also find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at With Nothing to Say. And thank you all for listening.
Thank you again.